Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. As always, with me is my co-host, producer, and...
faithful sidekick.
Now, I don't know who's whose sidekick in this, but we'll
we're like, you know, Chang and Eng.
Right.
We're just actually sort of conjoined twins born years apart from separate parents.
It's weird that way.
But yeah, it's because of time bullets.
It was totally apocalypse and time bullets that made that happen. But you have joined us once again for Hey Kids Comics, and I haven't said this in a while, and it dawned on me today that I haven't explained this, but, you know, if you're just finding us and you haven't gone back and listened, we are a weekly single-topic comic book show that isn't about comic books. that's what we are. We don't
target specific comics, like, here's what came out last week.
Right, right. We overarching themes and topics, and sometimes we make with the funny. But tonight's issue... We came up with on the, I think it was like 10 or 11 issues ago, we were talking about, I think it was probably Batman, because that's what we do, and we were talking about how...
it's bound to be the most, the catalyst for this.
Right, we were talking about how he just absorbs children into his life and then puts them in the worst possible situations. Cole has aptly named this episode Reckless Endangerment, because that's all being a sidekick is. That's it.
It really is, and the most troublesome part, especially in the Batman equation, is he's working very closely with the commissioner of police.
Right.
Of the city, you know, Gotham City in this case, and, you know, vigilantism, turning a blind eye to that is one thing, but to turn a blind eye to not only once, but repeatedly bring small children out into the line of fire...
Right.
I mean, you know what kind of paperwork the cops have to go through to, like, let some teenager do a ride-along for his high school project?
Right?
And, yeah, we just sort of wink and smile when Robin comes in with an arm in a sling because Killer Croc bit him.
But it's all right.
Yeah, it's okay because that's because of the territory. You know, you play with fire, you will get burned.
Yeah. Right? Like, oh, it's...
Oh, wait a minute. We shouldn't probably let kids actively play with fire. They don't have, like, a ride-along for firemen.
That's true. You never see anybody saying...
Nobody gets to do that. You know, come on inside the burning building.
So we're going to explore sidekicks tonight. The ins and outs, the psychology, bests and worsts, why? Why is it necessary to have sidekicks?
And the thing of it is, I think what we're really going to explore here is not just the sidekick phenomenon, because the sidekick makes good sense. If it's, you know, if your sidekick is the Sancho Panza to your, or the hell, like Don Quixote.
Yeah, like...
The Tonto to your Lone Ranger, apart from the fact that Tonto simply gets sent into town to get beaten up. Or the Watson to your Sherlock Holmes. These are okay because these are people who made a conscious decision to, you know, hang around, come along, be more than just an occasional helper, and let their lives be fiercely intertwined with that of the protagonist. But... for the most part, you know, when you're luring small children into dangerous situations, that's the sort of thing that either gets you on an ambush journalism show.
Right.
Or, you know, gets you arrested and put on a list for the rest of your life. So no matter where you live, people can go on the internet and, oh, look, apparently... somebody's living at Wayne Manor is on the hot list.
You just show up with a sixer of Mike's Hard Lemonade and Chris Hansen asks you to sit down. And
that's right.
Then it's all over.
So, you know, the sidekick like, say, was it Nomad or Falcon running around with Captain America, we have no problem with this.
Right,
Nomad and Falcon took some time to train, and they went to the gym. They you know, took a few lumps. They had a few guys shoot at them, and then they're like, hey, let's hang out with Captain America a while. That's great. That's fine. But when Captain America in the 40s decides to do what the Nazis are doing and recruit some preteen.
Right. You don't need a crystal knocked.
Is this Japan at the end of the war? What the hell?
Nobody needs crystal knocked.
For long as well.
But, yeah, so you mentioned Don Quixote. Because this is that we should say this is a comic book show, but the idea of the sidekick is not, you know, structurally restrained.
I think you could say that the idea of the sidekick goes back to even the classics.
Absolutely, it does.
Because apparently Hercules ran around with somebody that no one ever wrote about.
Exactly.
and Xena.
It wasn't Aeolus.
I'm sure that who was our your friend whose name escapes me, but who's steeped in the classic.
Kelly. Kelly could tell us all kinds of things.
Yeah, dear God, there really wasn't like that. Yeah.
So I want to explore. I want to start the show by exploring some of the form and function. What purpose the sidekick serves? Because the psychologically, it's a really interesting dynamic to enter into any kind of literature. Where do you think?
Well, partly, I think, in a way, the sidekick serves many a purpose. You have the aspect of the constant companion. You have, in a way, they're like the ultimate booster, because when you're at your best, you can always be real snarky, like, "Oh, elementary, my dear Watson,"
right?
Ass, you know. Yeah, I don't have your brain. Sorry, but you know that they can really pep you up a little bit when you're having a bad day. But they're also, you know, a friend, ideally a companion. They're the one you can, you know, can be your boots on the ground, and where you literally can be two people,
right?
You know, where one of you can go like off digging through the archives and perhaps get clubbed on the head by the bad guys, while the other one of you figures out, number one, what happened to his friend, and then who perpetrated all the nastiness.
Yeah, for the first thing that when I think of sidekick, you know, the first function of the sidekick in my mind is plot device. You use a sidekick as a plot device. Whether it's because you need someone to be kidnapped and rescued, or you need to push a story forward. Or you've simply jumped the shark. You've gone redheaded, orphan on growing pains. You've gone. You know what I mean? That's
absolutely. Or the other purpose it can serve, though, is allow you to literally split your narrative.
True.
If Dr. Watson is off working part of the problem, while Sherlock Holmes is obviously reserved the bigger, more cerebral part of the problem for himself, then you can tell two parts of a parallel story and draw them together through the vehicle of the sidekick. So it allows you to sort of break your story apart and follow not one but two protagonists.
Yes, agreed. So you can further explore the space when you have someone else, a cipher for the main protagonist in the game. And you get that a lot, I think, in your Batman universe with Robbins, because you're essentially talking about, you know, Elton John's Tiny Batman when when you have a Robin. They can do the same things. They just might not be as good at it. So you need somebody to crack the computer, or you need somebody to lift fingerprints. You send Robin to do that job while you're cracking the heads on the Royal Flush Gang.
And the thing about it is also, like in the case of Robin, and this is where, you know, up to the point where it really gets troublesome, is the age issue. With Robin especially, you have this sort of inferred, if not always acted upon, idea that I'm just training the next generation. Bruce Wayne doesn't have time for a family, so he goes out and just buys one as needed, you know. And this is literally the Robins become the next generation Batmans. And that's borne out ultimately, but, you know, at times you kind of wonder, are you really, you know, is this Batman and son, or is this just, you know, I just needed the help?
Or is it
Hunchback Snaggletooth guy?
He ain't cutting it.
He ain't cutting it for fingerprints.
But
leaves more than he takes.
Because, you know, here's the thing, right? For some people, yes. But I almost never see a sidekick unless you're talking about, let's say, Bucky Barnes as a sidekick. Yes, he was Captain America did not accept Bucky Barnes as you know, as anything but a soldier, a soldier in a war. He was his buddy. He was his, you know, comrade in arms, the band of brothers, the Howling Commandos, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Get that. For, like, Batman, for Green Arrow, for, you know, it never struck me that they needed the help. It was some kind of weird psychosis that brought them in. You know, for Batman, it's fairly obvious. You know, he's the, what's the name of the psychological disorders book that they release every year that has the, he's the DC's version of that. Like, okay, you lost your parents. All these kids lost their parents, except for, you know, one that you will eventually make sure loses their parents because you're Batman.
Yeah. It's gonna happen.
Right, it's a foregone conclusion.
I'm gonna tell you, Tim. Don't get too used to having your parents.
Don't hold on closely to that dad of yours. But it never.
You know what it's like to be an orphan? You will.
Like, here, let me help you by giving you a life and teaching you lessons and being a surrogate parent and also giving you a bow and arrow and teaching you to handle explosive arrow.
How to build your own laser and drill and boxing glove arrows. I guess you kind of start with a boxing glove. That one's pretty easy. But the thing about it is it wants at its core to be Obi-Wan and Luke or Paul Verhoeven's Excalibur.
Yes.
You know, Merlin and young Arthur, you know.
Yes.
You want it to be this sort of didactic relationship where the mentor is teaching the student. You know, you look upon the cake, you cannot know. A look at the cake is like looking at the future. Until you've tasted it, you don't know what it's like.
Who played Merlin in that movie? I can't remember.
The guy they used in the Spawn movie for...
Yes, it was. But why is his impression really similar to the Ian McClellan Magneto impression? Yeah.
Well, the future Charles.
Not them.
The cake is like the future.
It is not us. It is not them. It's us.
They're not the cake, Charles. Haters gotta hate us because they ate the cake.
Because they ate that's the new one. Ladies and gentlemen, # haters gonna hate us because they ate the cake.
The cake. So, that I think is part of the psychology is there's sort of this idea, this underlying feeling that we're training the next generation, but there's also this sort of selfish kind of mini-me thing going on.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look, it's my pet Wonder Woman.
Exactly. It's like
it's a preteen girl. She hasn't even gone through puberty, for God's sake, and you're making her, like, you know, deflect bullets with magic. And granted, you're giving her magic blades. Thank God for that, or she'd be largely...
you should get a gold star for parent of the year. But
otherwise, she would be largely wristless, if not handless. Pretty pronto.
But almost instantly.
Almost instantly. And I guess, you know, in Wonder Girl's case, at least she got some of the power of the gods or something. I mean, she was pretty tough.
Yeah.
She could lift cars and stuff. You know, Robin ain't going to lift cars without a jack or a crane or something. Or unless he just gets like Bill Bixby hulked up for 20 seconds on some adrenaline. But, you know, a lot of these guys, they don't get anything except the brightest colors.
Right?
The night. And I brought daylight with me. I brought day glow Robin with me. I wonder who's going to... It's left Fox Television's briefly... existing tick.
Yes.
You know, they complain about being in the bright color. Who do you think they're going to shoot at first?
Well, and that brings me to my next point, which is what does the superhero... They get their bright colors, but they also serve as a different kind of light, and that's, in a lot of cases, they serve as a voice of conscience because they are young. Because they are unsullied. They are the unsullied. Because they are the innocent, they bring about a voice of conscience to the darker hero. And you don't see a lot of the lighter heroes with actual sidekicks.
Yeah, I think Green Arrow was probably the closest.
But he still shot people with a bow and arrow.
Yeah. Even if it wasn't a deadly one, it's still... I mean, you get hit with a boxing glove coming at you at 217 miles an hour. You know,
it's going to sting.
Yeah, I think even Mike Tyson would flinch at that idea.
Right. No. It's so they serve as what Batman? Why are you doing this, Batman? What purpose do you serve,
Batman? I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure if you hit him one more time, he's gonna go into a coma.
Right. Like so the sidekick throughout history and you were saying Sancho, which is very true to form, was served as kind of the mirror to reality. The voice of conscience, the reason,
you needed an anchor, essentially. Batman, yes. I think in his core, Bruce Wayne knew he needed that anchor. He needed someone there to say enough is enough, or, get some sleep, have a bite to eat, perhaps.
Exactly.
He needed that assistant, as it were, and chum.
And you know he wasn't listening to Alfred.
Chum was an awkward term.
It's always been an awkward term.
Because it's sort of like, isn't that what you throw out to attract the sharks?
Yes, it is. But just awful. Don't call anybody that.
That's why we, Catherine and I created a character for a kind of superhero stuff we were doing that eventually got folded into the Kid Tapeworm universe.
Sure.
Was the Snipe. The Snipe was the sidekick to a character I created called the Lure. But the Snipe, basically, he was kept on a steady diet of tracking devices, and then they would send the Snipe out kidnapped, and then they could track down every villain's lair when they came to rescue.
That's awesome. That's a really good one.
And to me, that is what sort of typified the idea of, the plot device of having someone to rescue. If you don't have a girlfriend, you should have a sidekick.
Right.
Because you need to have some reason to exist. And in some cases, it's almost like this compulsive need to, this sort of Munchausen apraxia that is in play where, I would like to see that explored, actually, as a sidekick type of thing. I don't know that it's ever been done where, the sidekick really is really there more to serve the needs of the hero.
Yeah.
Hero. I would like to see that, where the sidekick's deliberately put in harm's way. Because the hero needs to be able to be the one who swoops in to rescue. And after a trail of dead girlfriends, then who do you turn to next is the sidekick.
Right. And,
Alan Moore, I want you to jump all over
that. My God. Alan Moore, just stay. You're going to trip on your beard. Beyond, the other thing that the sidekick does, if you're not Frank Miller, is make your protagonist more relatable and likable. Because when you're Batman, it's hard to be super likable. When you're the Punisher, it's hard to be super likable. Even as the Green Arrow, you kind of come off as a little crazy. Or Moon Knight, for that matter. But you introduce a sidekick into the mix, it can do two things, and you've seen it do two things. You can either use that as a lever to make that character a little more likable, like I said, unless you're Frank Miller and you're writing All-Star Batman.
Yeah. It gets into some dangerous water.
Or you can use it to prove that you're a monster. Like you have that monster side in you because you're willing to put your sidekick in harm's way, or you say things to your sidekick that you probably shouldn't say.
And you don't get the pass in this case of a youthful sidekick. You don't get the pass of it's a younger sibling tagging along and
right.
doing it in the midst of your own adventures accidentally. You sought this kid out. His parents were just shot in front of him and fell to their death from trapeze and probably splattered all over the place like that description in Best in Show. And, then you come along and say, by the way, not only am I Bruce Wayne millionaire who will adopt you, you can also come fight crime with me as Batman.
Right.
So I guess, there's this kind of sense that he knew just how screwed up this kid's mind had to be at this moment. I've been there. I saw the same sort of thing happen with my parents. If some old guy came up to me and said, hey, you want to fight crime? I'd be all over that.
That's that is definitely the superhero version of I have some candy, would you like to get in my van?
Yeah, exactly, except his van is the Batmobile.
And his candy is batarangs and...
Exactly, smoke bombs and big sticks to beat people up with. Or...
Right. What if the entire Batman universe was just... What if we were seeing it through the eyes of Batman and in everybody else... It, he like was still Batman, but...
All of a sudden, you're like trying to convince people to your side. Sandworms, you hate them. Like, no, you. I don't care. It doesn't... We really don't have that much in common.
Right. And everybody else is just kind of like, what is... Why are we letting him do this? Yeah. Like...
You know, does the city have such a collective shame that without Batman... That it would turn into Escape from New York with, like, Dick Tracy villains.
Right.
That they're willing to say, well, yeah, you know, he's probably only 15 or 16 tops.
Right.
But, you know, it is Batman. He's our protector. He's our savior. You know, he did, like, put a batarang in that guy's head that was trying to shoot me the other day. So I'm good with it. You know, it's not like my kid. And this kid's parents can't be worried because they're beyond that now. They're taking a dirt nap.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's a jadedness to Gotham City. So Batman, in many ways, isn't the best one to explore because, you know, he's already in a city that's screwed up.
Right.
It's like, you know, you want to... You'd think that, like, University of Gotham's psychology department would be the only department they had because... Who's got time for anything else?
Right, exactly.
So then you go look at, say, Green Arrow or Wonder Woman or, you know, Aquaman, you have to kind of give him a pass because they have different ways in the Marianas Trench. You can't really look at a foreign national and say, well, you know, culturally speaking, it's like Germany. You know, we wouldn't let 10-year-olds drink beer at dinner, but we're not Germany. So, you know, you can't look at Aqualad. Fighting crime is like, oh, that's so wrong. It's like, well, maybe, you know, Atlanteans at the age of crime fighting consent, if you will, is much younger. It's like the Appalachians. Whoa. They have a younger age of crime fighting consent than the Appalachians, is what I'm saying.
It had
nothing to do with preteen brides.
I don't even know what to say to Appalachia. First of all, I don't even know how to reference... I don't even have a fixed point to reference Appalachia Batman. All right? I don't... I can't even... Dukes of Hazzard? I can't...
He's got like a Bat-a-Banjo or something.
It's Bat-a-Banjo. Bat-a-Jugman.
The kid in Deliverance is actually his Robin.
God,
everybody's getting that mental picture now.
Everybody just let it sink in. Just let it sink in.
Seeing the scene with Ronnie Cox, and they're adding a domino mask.
Oh, my God. So changing the subject now, before we take this down a road that we can't come back from.
That's right.
Because,
or down a river, if you will.
Because you, at some point, will hear the episode of United States of Geekdom we were just on, and then you will figure out why we could do that very simply.
And why we're so punchy right now.
Right, we are super punchy. Let's talk about the one thing that super sidekicks get to do more than anyone else, and that is stand up to the superhero. Because no one else, Jim Gordon, Batman doesn't give three dams what Jim Gordon has to say, as is evidenced by the fact that he eluded Jim Gordon's capture for many, many years. You know, we're talking about classic narcissism, and the only people...
Well, and should God forbid Jim... register a complaint or a concern and make the repeated mistake that for some reason it's in his mannerisms, like, you know, some people like straighten things on their desk all day.
Right.
His little mannerism is he has a terrible propensity for turning around.
Yeah, he just facing forward.
Like, you know, I'm a little concerned about the way you're treating that young boy. Damn it! I was talking!
Right. Why do you really not respect authority so much that you can't let me finish the words pizza party.
Write a note. Here, Batman, here's a memo. Let's see you get out of that one. Batman would just like get a bat lighter and say, what memo? Gone.
Just gone.
Look, Lena Horne. He's gone.
We're back to Lena Horne. But yeah, they're the only ones that get the opportunity to say, and you see this time and time again. You see it with the Robins. The Robins are the only ones that stand up to Batman. But you see it with Arsenal or Red Arrow or, you know, Speedy or whichever version of that you want to run. You know what? I don't think you ever needed a Superboy Superman standoff. You know,
well, Superboy is Superman dynamic, I guess. You know, originally they were one and the same.
Right, right.
But then later on with the Connor Kent, the Clone Wars.
The Clone
Superman,
Wars,
if you will.
Right.
Jango Fett.
You're just doing free word association now. Yeah, that's all you're doing.
It's all about. I'm actually doing a study with the psychology department at the University of Gotham. But anyway, in that situation, that's a little bit different dynamic. But you're right; they do get to be the ones who not only stand up to the superhero and say, "Hey, you know,
yeah,
Lama, have a little something for the effort," but they're also ones who they're like the only kids who can go and be treated like adults to the point where, you know, even like, you know, Gordon will take getting blasted by Robin and the same, like, wait a minute, some kid just tell me what to do,
right?
But it was Robin, so I guess it's okay. And the thing is that you see that manifested at its height in the genesis of the Teen Titans.
Yes you do.
We're like, oh, we're tired of living in your shadow. It's like, well, you'd be like living in an orphanage, if I might point that out. Or, you know, obviously one of your number would be like just some forgotten drug addict on Skid Row or what? But, you know, they're like, okay, enough's enough. We're tired of being like the one you send to go pull fingerprints. We got that one down.
Right.
Now we're going to go and fight, like, Joker's daughter and find out she's actually a hero. Okay. So wasn't a great start, but, you know, so you've got the Teen Titans ultimately becoming kind of like, as you go many, many years later with the new Teen Titans when they're all adults and are in the company of other adults, and they become kind of like the X-Men.
Right.
But they're bringing in, they're acting both as crime fighter and also kind of the training house. They're like the Bush League of the Justice League. Justice Bush League, if you will.
Right. So much so that they lobotomized Dr. Light and threw him after.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I just reread the entirety of Identity Crisis in my brain when I said that.
Yeah.
It's a toughie. That's a toughie. But yeah, like the Teen Titans, that was their big, you know, thumb in the eye. Like, we don't need to be sidekicks anymore. We can be our own superheroes. And you know, what's funny is the superheroes went, fine. Just take other we'll just take other children waifs off the street
them
new super sidekicks.
Yeah, so meanwhile, you know, Robin's trying to come of his own with the Titans.
Right.
And they're like, aren't you a little old to be Robin? I mean, nice legs, mind you, but... And like, aren't you like younger, smaller, and back in Gotham? No, that's the other Robin.
Right, right.
So it's a little wonder, you know, he was forced to take on Nightwing. There was a little bit of a false start there because he had like kind of the crazy disco Xanadu look.
Mm-hmm. Best then, costume ever made. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it went to something a little more Batman-esque, if you will.
So who? Who were the best sidekicks, in your opinion? Who in the sidekick world for you were the reasons we've just discussed? Yeah. Who are the best sidekicks?
I think, you know, really, if you want to look at the best sidekick, you really have to look no further than Robin. He is the sidekick because he defined what it was. Even more, I mean, Bucky went to war for God's sake. God bless him for that. Got himself froze up for different reasons. But, you know, Robin emerged out of the worst possible circumstances. Under the tutelage of someone who emerged out of the worst possible circumstances.
Right.
Now that I think about it, it's kind of manipulative. But, you know, in all seriousness, though, Robin took everything he had and, you know, followed the teachings of Batman and ultimately becomes as good or better. He becomes goes from, you know, being a sidekick to being an above average to great detective himself. He becomes a great crime fighter. He starts to kind of Batman himself in many ways and take others under his wing, or his night wing.
Oh, but, I see what you did.
But, you know, he is ultimately the pinnacle. He is the model sidekick. But, you know, some of the other sidekicks, one of the most bizarre examples of a sidekick is like, how did this even... It's sort of like, we don't know what else to do with him. Let's give him to the robot.
Yeah.
Which was technically an android called the Human Torch, who ran around with what... If I'm not mistaken, I don't think Toro was just sort of some sort of weird, like, Haley Joel Osment in AI... I think he was like a proper kid, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
I need to look that up because I hadn't really thought about Toro. But I'm pretty sure that Toro was actually a proper human child who could catch fire.
Yes.
You know, much to the light of Beavis and Butthead. And they, you know, for some reason, he just, what else are you going to do with a kid who can catch himself on fire and turn it on and off at will? Is you just hook him up with the fire android guy.
Right.
He was actually Thomas Raymond of New York City decided to...
Thomas Raymond of New York City, come on down!
And catch fire! It's a whole different sort of, you know, catching fire, young dystopian...
Right.
Arrangement there. But yeah, then he goes, and then what do? They send him off to go fight Nazis. I mean, granted, he's a little better suited for the job, because for the most part, bullets melt before they get close to him, than, say, I don't know, Bucky, which, you know, ice cream barely melts before it can harm him.
Right. Matter of fact, he cringes when he sees ice. Poor guy.
Exactly. That's
poor guy.
Not as bad as bullets, but, you know, that stuff's kind of cold. You know, don't even think about getting your ice cream anywhere near Toro. You think Katy Perry can, California girls will melt your popsicle.
Whoa. Hold on. I need to take a second. Cole just made a modern reference to a Katy Perry song on the show. I don't know if they've ever been so proud.
Every now and again, I'm almost topical. I'm about 5 years
off. That's only about 5 years off, but it was still a... That's wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate that.
I can't... Okay, so for me, I'm going to take it outside of comic books. I'm going to take it outside a little bit. Not totally. We can pull it back into comics, but... I'm gonna have to say that as far as the best sidekick goes of all time, I'm gonna go Chewbacca.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was an unlikely partnership.
Granted, I was admiring myself in the
right because you know we as we discussed on Hey Kids Comics Live at AllCon, our true selves are Han and Chewbacca as well as a few others, but. But yeah, absolutely. But without a doubt, I think that Chewbacca is probably the best sidekick because the thing about Chewbacca, and not to get too Star Warsian on a comic book show, but that's so easy for Cole and I to do, is that you know it was an unlikely partnership. It came out of a blood debt. That somehow managed to turn into a true friendship, and then a true partnership, and you know it's the epitome of what a sidekick friendship should be for me.
Oh yeah, in many ways, I think it's in the Han Chewbacca dynamic, which I think ultimately is what the Batman Robin dynamic becomes.
Yes,
is you have this. By way of example, in Han and Chewbacca's case, you have pilot / co-pilot.
Right. Right. Chewbacca
but
is my co-pilot.
They are friends and ultimately equals in each other's eyes. I think Han doesn't look at Chewbacca so much as a co-pilot, except in so much that occasionally when they're like doing business, he has to present him as co-pilot because people get a little nervous. Like, oh, we're both pilots. Oh, isn't that cute? I'm going to go find a different person to carry
right.
the spice. Yeah.
Right. Like, to do the Kessel run. I can't.
Yeah. You equals just enjoy yourself. Yeah, that just plays a little awkward to people. So, ultimately that's what it comes down to is that the partnership transcends that sense. You know, they're no longer business partners or
right.
They become fast friends and they've developed this sort of, you know, it's the Jay and Silent Bob kind of hetero life mate.
Exactly.
Vibe there.
So yeah, that for me that is the top of the top of the heap for me. But yeah, you're right. You do get the dynamic, the eventual Nightwing and Batman dynamic.
Exactly.
It's not so much the Robin.
Because, you know, you didn't have, like, a series of Star Wars films of, you know, young Chewie. It wouldn't really work because Chewie's, like, considerably older than Han.
Right.
Like, you know, it's not like May, December. We're talking, like, May and of 30 years ago and December of next year. Kind of age gap there.
Right, because Kashyyyki and... Wookiees tend to live.
They live a long ass time. I think he's supposed to be like 500 years old or something like that. It's
when 500 years old, you're rich. This hairy, you will not be.
Some ungodly number. He's like old fella, and he's still young compared to Itchy in the god awful holiday special.
This
just makes me itchy to think about. But yeah, you're right. The sidekick becomes things like. And the sidekick dynamic is all over the map because you have, for example, some really stupid, probably one of the stupidest kids in the world, young man, high school to college age, gets a wild hair, wants to go out in the desert and be alone and play his guitar.
Oh,
completely
no.
oblivious to every warning sign,
damn it.
Chain link fence, barbed wire, armed guard. I don't know what was going on out in that ridiculous bomb range that they didn't bother to have anybody, like, say, watching the perimeter.
Right.
To make sure, like, you know, grandma didn't get a hold of the keys and drive out in the middle of nowhere. Somebody on a drunken stupor didn't wake up at 3 in the morning in a pool of vomit in the back of their Chevy and then, you know, get completely...
You've really thought about this, haven't you?
I have. I've long analyzed the Hulk dynamic, but... The nice thing about gamma bombs is none of that really matters, so perhaps that's why.
Right.
No perimeter fence. They just, you know, we'll dig a trench here, because if somebody's driving blindly, that'll stop them cold.
Right.
Or you can duck into it. You can, like, push guys down into it and take the brunt of the blast yourself.
Right.
Because gamma radiation really terribly harmful. I don't know really why we invested in bombs. Because... for the most part, nothing ever happens. So, you know, you get the Rick Jones is an interesting dynamic where you get kind of a hanger-on. Or the one person who... There's some... Enough of a connection there where the brutish early Hulk, that's his connection to humanity in much the same way as, you know, Batman and Robin.
Right.
In a stranger sort of way. So, like, there's something that this... entity within Banner connects with.
Yes.
It knows there. It's like Memento or something, you know, except without permanently scrawling.
Yeah.
You know, this is the gremlin, do not right, trust his lies.
This is the, you know, this is the link. You know, and there are a lot of Not that it's necessarily a sidekick, but I would consider Jane Foster for Thor in the same realm, where yeah. it's your link to humanity. It's your, you know, it's the thing that ties you.
But at the same time, if you have a girlfriend who is a scientist,
right,
or you have a pal who and hanger on who's, you know, an independent, no longer a minor, these are the okay sidekicks. We cite them by way of example of the sidekick dynamic, but ultimately we're really, really concerned about this, especially in the 40s and 50s or, you know, what have you, this spike in the, just throwing kids in harm's way. Were there that enough kids that we did that? And, you know, the thing is, okay, like, say, for example, the Newsboy Legion, those kids were rough and tumble Bowery boys who did their own thing. They were like a two-fisted hour gang.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's okay because they hit upon that themselves, and that was their reaction to being, you know, Fat Albert, the Cosby kids hung out in the junkyard. These guys just go out and get into scraps and solve crimes. But that was a conscious decision they're making. It's not like the Batmobile drove up with a pack of Twizzlers.
That's right. Yes. Yes, you agreed. You said, I'm going to help you know, the Guardian or whoever it was
yeah,
that you were
exactly.
helping.
Hey, that's Guardian. He's helping us out here. Let's help him out. A little piece of the action here. Yeah. That sort of thing. It's like the kid in Star Trek. But it's not like Kirk and Spock said, hey kid, you want to kind of help us out here?
It's just...
Like, I don't care what century you're from. That's just wrong.
Right. It's the worst. It's the worst.
And what's odd, though, is you really never see supervillains adopting this. The worst people in the world aren't doing the worst thing in the world.
Right. Exactly. Which really makes you want to take a look at this.
Doom or, I mean, again, it's Latveria, so they got different ways. But, you know, you didn't see, like, the Scorpion or... Green Goblin, and like Gobby Jr. or something flying around next to him, helping him wreak havoc.
Right, and that's the one.
And that should be the second nature. Like, hey, I got a great idea. I'm going to convince some brat kid that going into crime would be really cool because all the cool kids are smoking and throwing
literally smoking. They're actually smoking.
They're actually smoking, whether it be their goblin glider, or they're actually on fire.
Right. So, okay, who's the worst?
Wow.
Who's just the worst?
The worst kid sidekick.
Yeah, the worst young sidekick that you can think of. Just bad.
Wow.
Or just sidekick in general.
Yeah. Well, you know, the comic relief sidekick gets tiresome after a while. That's the purview of Saturday morning cartoon annoyances. So, you know, when you have an already over-the-top character like Plastic Man, you don't need a Doivy Dickles.
Oh, Doivy Dickles.
Or, sorry, that wasn't it.
No, Doivy Dickles was Green Lantern.
Yes. Mr. Lantern. Yeah, so, you know, I'm sorry. Alan Scott should have just made a bubble around Doivy Dickles' head until he suffocated. And then just claim he found him that way. Like, drag him out into Suicide Swamp, blame it on Grundy.
Right, just
you know,
right
what
up.
Are they going to do? Execute him the Green Mile Grundy, he's back in a week.
Oh, God, it's so good. Oh, it's so good. You're on point tonight, Mr. Houston. You're on point.
Again, it's that USG episode.
Oh, you Green Mile Grundy. And he's back in
Hashtag
a week.
Hashtag Green Mile Grundy.
Hashtag Green Mile Grundy.
Oh, my God.
That was brilliant. That was pretty brilliant. So,
you know, a lot of times it's the annoying sidekick that I could do without. And I understand that it belongs to a different age.
It does, but it doesn't, because up until recently, now I don't know if we've really had them in, like, the new 52, but you got Rick Jones. Rick Jones ends up serving a purpose. Like, he works for the Avengers Mansion. Like, he fixes their vehicles. He, you know, he's doing his thing. So I could see that. You know, yeah, he was stumbled upon in the desert, and now he's snapper car. Snapper car is what I'm saying right now, Cole.
Oops, there we are. There
he is.
I somehow accidentally hit the mute button there. But, you know, Snapper Carr is like a low-key Doyby Dickles in that, you know, Doyby Dickles is like Babu in the I Dream of Jeannie cartoon as voiced by Joe Besser. So you have, like, double or triple layer annoying. Where Snapper Carr is kind of like, I don't know, almost like Robin and Wendy in the Super Friends. You know, I was more willing to accept them as semi-comic relief, but the dog needed to be put down.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
So they were kind of the Snapper car to Super Friends.
But Snapper really didn't do anything.
Yeah, he did sort of insinuate himself into the group. And
I think that's the worst thing about a lot of super... There was this, you know, you had Snapper, Rick Jones to a lesser extent, but not really. But you had
he was at least invited to the party.
Exactly.
He didn't crash it, like, you know, try to pour your beer into detergent bottles or anything like that.
So for me, it's like Snapper car. Just his... His thing was, I'm a beatnik. My call sign is to snap at things. Like, you are annoying, sir.
Well, they had recently got rid of the even more annoying Pistol Wink Smith.
Pistol Wink Smith. Double Guns Jones.
Yes. They went through a whole series of them, you know, the high-fiving Bill and just finally, like, okay, fine, Snapper Car, you're in. You somehow, like, won the lottery of least annoying. If such a thing is possible.
But, yes,
let's take the sidekick dynamic down a darker path.
Okay.
And we're not the ones doing it. It was from a little independent publisher called King Hell Press.
King Hell Press.
King Hell Press, okay. Circa 1990-91.
Okay.
And I believe it was a five-issue limited series called Brat Pack.
Brat Pack, okay.
By Rick Veitch.
Yeah, Veitch. Yeah, Veitch. Veitch.
So the idea behind Brat Pack was actually meant very much to be a pull-no-punches, hardcore trip through hell look at the superhero / sidekick dynamic.
Okay.
And it, you know, it tilts at a lot of the conventions thereof, because you have a couple of characters like Midnight Mink, who is obviously meant to be a brutal homosexual version of Batman.
Okay.
And his sidekick, Chippy. Yes.
Chippy.
Chippy. And Moon Mistress, who is meant to be a just hardcore feminazi, man-hating warrior woman, a la some sort of like sterile rage bitch version of Wonder Woman. And her sidekick, Luna. And then you had a couple other characters. Like, one of the most standout characters was Judge Jury, who is runs around this giant gavel that has guilty spelled backward.
Oh, God.
So that when he judges criminals, he just sort of smashes their foreheads in and leaves the mark of guilty across them, permanently embossed inside their old man brain.
Old man brains.
But and Kid Vicious was his sidekick. And, you know, you think the All-Star Batman indoctrination of Robin, people are like, oh my God.
Right, right.
It's not your father's Batman. Judge Jury and essentially, their arch nemesis, Dr. Blasphemy, I believe, has killed all of their original sidekicks. So this is the story of them recruiting the new generation of sidekicks. And the new generation, Kid Vicious, at one point must crawl along the floor covered with broken beer bottles.
What?
With Judge Jury standing on his back.
Oh, my God.
And I think that was just, you know, maybe before a brisk swim in alcohol or something. I can't remember exactly
right
what followed. Maybe they just sat down and had a beer and said good times. But, you know, it was meant to be a very brutal look at the whole concept
of the
kid sidekick. And it's a very difficult read. I can't even say that I would recommend it, except out of, you know, some sense of morbid curiosity.
Right.
But, you know, I can't really recommend it from the standpoint of it's like the Rise of the Planet of the Apes or whichever the first one, where the kid gave the orangutan a copy of Black Hole. It's no wonder they grew up.
Right?
Their civilization hated ours.
We both totally thought the same.
Like, God, give him something worthwhile. Next time I see you, I'll bring you something from the library. Give him damn close Black Hole, for God's sake.
Like here's a copy of Metamorphosis by Kafka.
Yeah,
you'll be fine.
This is the Rosetta Stone upon which you're going to judge our civilization.
Right. Here's the collected works of Rob Liefeld. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah. Wow. It's like...
No wonder. No wonder.
You could just see Maurice there going back and telling Caesar that we've got to look. Have you seen this? Seriously, these things have to go.
Right. We can't suffer this.
We need to beat them to the point where they breed mindless mutes. Then we can, you know, use as livestock. That's the future lawgiver.
All right.
Not kill ape, and nobody ever read this shit.
Never, ever, ever. They burn every copy. All right. On that note, I think it's time for us to wrap the show.
Yeah, I think we did justice with a side of spaghetti to...
We did. We should honorable mention there, goes to Arthur from The Tick. Let's just make sure that he gets mentioned at some point in this.
And the fact that in the pages of The Tick, as well as to a different degree in literally every incarnation of The Tick, from the original comic to the cartoon to the live action, they touched upon the sidekick as being sort of the less than important, less than human,
right,
less than necessary. Or, you know, the in the original comic, the sidekick's lounge was just like a little closet in the comic club.
Exactly.
You know, the sidekicks were all just sort of remanded to have, like, you know, there was maybe a soda machine in there and an old sofa.
So Arthur gets honorable mention and most valuable sidekick, in my opinion.
Absolutely. He is the MVP, because he really, you know, I think even the Tick would have preferred to call him a fellow hero. But
right.
Insisted that he was a sidekick.
So let's go ahead and wrap it up and do some plugs. One thing I wanted to say before we get too far into the plugs is that, on the topic of Lubicon, which will be coming up on every one of our shows, I'm going to insist upon it.
There's going to be a lot of things we're going to be
right
really hitting heavily upon, but Lubicon is definitely one of them, even though we're just under a year out.
But just under a year out, but vendor applications have gone live. So if you are a vendor and you want to get in on a first-year show in a really reasonable price, I think that the table price is like $80.
I'll tell you right now, for any show, $80 is a bargain, because even little one-day shows nowadays, it's hard to find a show anywhere.
Right.
That I've seen that anyone can afford. I got into show dealing in the days when there were at least some shows that anyone could afford.
Right.
And you don't see that anymore, and I applaud them for that. And I also applaud that. I want to go on record saying I know enough about the folks putting on Lubicon.
Oh, God, yeah.
That they're doing their homework. They're doing their footwork, and I applaud them for that, because when I put on my little half-ass one-day tabletop shows, we busted our ass.
Yeah.
To make those happen.
And like we said,
and you don't see a lot of that happening. You see a lot of people coming in and poof, there's an instant convention.
Right.
And they're completely indifferent to anything with the green.
Yeah, exactly. And we aren't talking about the Swamp Thing. And they're doing everything right. They're really out there in the community making a community convention. So if you happen to be an artist or a vendor and you want to go out and get in on a corridor show that does have the possibility, if you're listening in the DFW area, of driving, you know, business back to you, as well as your artist portfolio, as well as building a community. Look at these vendor apps. They aren't going to last forever. And I would get in as soon as you can. So that's the Lovicon plug, for at least for my portion. I think Cole might have one too.
If you don't feel like this has been plugged enough, check out deepelementonair.com.
Boom.
On Sunday, on Easter Sunday. Well, not only are we going to talk about the Easter eggs in episode one.
Damn it.
We are going to have our special guest, Danae from LubbockCon, will be joining us in the studio all the way from Lubbock, actually coming all the way here to Dallas to be a part of the show.
That's right.
This is a level of dedication.
Dedication. Seriously.
You know, she's coming all this way to plug a show that's like 10 months out, and like, or 9 months out, or whatever it is. And I'm like,
they got hustle.
I'm telling you,
they got hustle.
I wish more shows were like this. And of course, you're going to hear a lot about that show. You're going to hear about Texas Comic Fest coming up in June in Louisville.
All kinds of stuff there.
But the Jedi Cole Universe will have a booth where you can come out and meet many of your favorite JCU personalities. You can get your copies of You Are Here, Volume 1 and 2. You can get in on some great prize raffles. We're doing some fundraising raffles at the show. Pit idea got quashed.
Yeah, it did. But that's all right. If anybody wants to bring us a ball pit.
Yeah, if you have a ball pit.
And you'd like to donate your ball pit. That sounds dirty. But
out of context, it would sound terrible.
Before that happens, we are going to be joining forces once again with Mr. Pickering up in Galaxy Call Dallas in
Garland, Texas.
In Garland, Texas, for Free Comic Book Day. We're going to be getting in there like swimwear.
Saturday, May the 2nd.
That's right.
You will have a big presence there as well, thanks to our good friend James, who was gracious enough to be the first one to ask us to come. And you know, apologies to everybody else who has come in. He just jumped on that right quick. We are very happy to be there. I wish we could do like 20 different store appearances that day.
I know, but I'm
old people, and that's not going to happen. So
you know, James is such a huge part of the community,
yes.
And I'm not saying that any of the other shops aren't, but James has been so helpful to the JCU that it's only right that if we're going to make an appearance, it would be there. Now that's not saying that the next day we're not going to head over to Red Pegasus and do what we can. You know, we'll do whatever we can.
Yeah, we'll probably be making a few stops anyway after the fact. But also, just in general, May 2nd, mark that down, Free Comic Book Day. If you've never set foot in a comic book shop in your life, this is a great opportunity. A lot of them will pull out the stops, do all kinds of events, have cosplayers out, do something. Even if they're just, you know, kind of low-key, go in there, check out some comic books. These are free. They aren't free to the retailer. That's something I always want to point out.
Please point that out.
Bear in mind that if you have a retailer in your area participating in this, they've put money up so you can have free comics on Free Comic Book Day, and you go and you thank them because they don't have to do this.
Right.
But they do it. I did it. We were often cash-strapped when we had our little one, our weekend-only shop, and we did the two Free Comic Book Day years that we could, and it was a blast. But, yeah, do always bear that in mind, that just because it's free to you don't mean it's free to them. It's super cheap, but it ain't free. But check out your local shops. Go in there, support them. Check out, you might, you know, pick up some books. There's the variety that are available is always staggering. You might discover something you never thought about. So, yeah, do check that out. Get involved if some of your local shops are doing some fun, cool things. See what you can do to help out.
That's right.
Comics and Games, by the way, are going to very soon. I'm afraid I don't have the information at hand. But they will soon be relocating to their new permanent location. They've been in their two-month pop-up location for several months now. And they are running a fundraiser to help generate funds for the move. And normally I've said this on their Facebook page for this, I'm usually a little dubious about fundraisers that are beneficial to an individual or to a group or something like that. Like I saw recently some cosplayer wanting everybody in the world to fund her trip to a convention.
Right.
I'm like, good luck with that. If you find enough stupid people, then hooray. But what Ray Pegasus are doing, what really, this is another place where they're just, you know, in this case, a company after my own heart.
Right.
Let's say you donate $20 to their MOVE fund. You get a $20 gift card or $20 gift certificate. You get, in other words, if you spend $20, you probably would have spent on the cool comics, games, collectibles, and fun stuff that their store is packed with and become even more packed with.
In the new space, right.
You know, you're probably going to spend that money anyway. And you're helping them move. It's a win-win.
It is. It is.
And it's not one of these selfish, oh, send me to Comic-Con type of things.
And not only is it a win-win for you, but we are talking about a group, you know, a couple of individuals that are growing to be such a part of a community. You know, they're a community-driven comic shop. They are they're almost a geek space at this point.
Yes, indeed.
And
they do some amazing fun stuff there. And we will have a link to that because they are damn near halfway to their goal.
That's amazing. All yeah, right. We need to link that.
And that's
and push
with only
that.
24 backers. I want to point out, their goal is $5,000. As we record, they're at $2,050 out of $5,000 with only 24 backers. How amazing is this? We will have links to the donation site. There's a great little video with Kenneth from Red Pegasus.
Who was a guest on Hey Kids Comics Live. Let's not forget. And wasn't James on that same show? Or no, it was Ron. Ron was on that
show.
Yeah,
Ron Killensworth.
We need to get James on that show. We need to get James
on that. But James has been on the Rant Crew Pit Live.
I don't care. I want him on Hey Kids Comics Live. James Pickering, I'm calling you out. You want to come? Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, do check that out, especially if you're in the Dallas area and you can avail yourself of the gift card. You know, give them the gift to help and get that move going, get them in a bigger space, because they have a fun little space, but it is a little space, and they need to...
They need the help.
Yeah.
They need our help to grow. And that's what we should be doing as a community is helping it grow. And you can do that. All right. So if you want to find any of these events or conventions, you can do so where, Cole?
You go to Convention Awareness Project Texas, which is www.cap-tx.info. Shorter version. I still have a hard time spitting it all out, but go to the Convention Awareness Project Texas. Every convention in the state of Texas all year long. Click on the name of any given convention. It'll take you to their website. I want to give a big thank you to everybody who has been supporting that site for the last 3 years. People who write to me and say, oh, by the way, Cole, that link you have isn't going anywhere. This particular convention is postponed. This one got canceled. These guys are notorious for shady deals. So we can get that information out there. It's not just about knowing the whens and wheres, because as we say, you can't go if you don't know. But it's also about, you know, finding out in advance that show you've been looking forward to all month isn't going to happen next month.
Right.
Before you drive out there.
Right.
Before you take the day off. So it's because we have another, again, with the community, we've got a great community of people who use this site, be it convention goers, artists, vendors, and even other conventions. And the outpouring of support for this has been amazing, and it's just a little pet project I started 3 years ago. It's a one man band, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's a big
and
challenge.
It's growing, and people are recognizing its value and its worth, and they're so keep
Actually,
it up.
I
people.
Have to say, keep it 100, Texas, because Texas will have or have had between what's already been and what's coming, there will be over 100 conventions in Texas this
year. That's right. That's right.
Unprecedented. Including our good friend Hoodie.
Yes.
The Geek Clown. Whoop, whoop. In December of this year, we'll be bringing back
Geek 3?
The Con.
Nice. For Geek 3 this year?
This is the second. This is
the second.
Geeky. But the event will be December 4th and 5th, I believe. It's going to be a 2-day show, if I'm not mistaken. in Louisville, again, if I'm not mistaken. I'm having to kind of check as we go. But we'll have a lot of information on that because the JCU have already been asked to be a huge part of that.
And we are happy to do so.
Yes, we are. We'll be happy to be working with Hoodie yet again. And it was just Eddie Medina and I from the Rancor Pit had a blast last year or year before.
I will be a part of this one.
You and he gets to be a part of that one. So check out Convention Warriors Project Texas. Look for us on the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, the home of a myriad podcasts, many of which will be now returning since we're coming off of our various hiatus. And you can also find Andy and myself and Eddie and me 3 times a month over at DeepElmOnAir.com with Hey Kids Comics Live the second Saturday of every month, unless scheduling doesn't permit, and we usually just bump it to the next week, which happens a lot.
It happens when it has to happen, all
after right? After we cemented the date, then immediately it stopped working. Everything would always hit.
Yeah.
But we're like Candyland. There'll always be a Hey Kids Comics Live.
That's right.
As far as you know. The Rancor Pit, which is on the cusp of celebrating our first anniversary.
That is crazy talk. That is crazy talk.
Deep Elm on Air. Thank you very much to Jansen. We love you. Thank you for bringing us
Jansen.
Support. Thank you for everything you do for those shows. And
the Holocron.
Also check out United States of Geekdom at UnitedStatesofGeekdom.com. We have an upcoming episode on supervillains and villains in general in movies, television, comics, real life.
It was the most ridiculous podcast. I can't even say that. It was not the most ridiculous podcast, but
it was
been
insanity
a lot of fun.
And everything we needed it to be. So check that out when it goes live. There'll probably be an episode or two before that, but check out the USG. Rick does some stuff over there.
We gotta go. I gotta cut you off. Anybody we forgot, we forgot you. I'm sorry. All right. So everybody out there, buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. And remember, if you find an orphan on the street, not okay to teach him how to fight crime. Just
that's
not
true.
Okay.
And also remember, # haters gotta hate us because they hate the cake.
That's right. And just it'll be on Facebook, I'm sure. But if it's not already, all right, everybody. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
See you next week.